Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. lawmakers are to discuss the Boko Haram insurgency, and DRC and Rwandan forces exchange gunfire. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. A U.S. House panel is set to get an update on Nigeria's Boko Haram insurgency as residents in the northeastern Borno State region grapple with another reported kidnapping by the militant group. The House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee meets today to discuss issues, including conditions in northern Nigeria where the militants have been most active. Congresswoman Karen Bass tells VOA the panel will also discuss U.S. efforts to help Nigeria fight the militants. The meeting comes on the heels of another suspected kidnapping by Boko Haram in the same region, where it abducted more than 200 schoolgirls in April. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say soldiers have exchanged gunfire with troops from neighboring Rwanda. The officials say Congolese forces opened fire today after the Rwandans crossed the border and abducted a Congolese soldier. The pre-dawn fighting near Kibumba in the eastern province of North Kivu lasted about 4 hours. There was no immediate word on any casualties. Islamist militants advancing across parts of northern Iraq have forced as many as 500,000 people to flee. The militants continue to hold Iraq's second city of Mosul, as both the prime minister and the provincial governor call on residents to fight to retake it. Edward Uranian reports.
Amateur video showed Islamic militants from the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant executing captive Iraqi soldiers and cutting off the heads of others as they brag about defending Muslims. It was not clear if the video was from fighting in Mosul or earlier battles. Prime Minister Nouri Maliki blasted Iraqi military officials who deserted their posts and fled Mosul, claiming in a speech Wednesday that they were part of a plot. He insisted that residents of Mosul and other volunteers should work to recapture the city and defeat the invaders. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Russia has warned Ukraine against refusing an offer from Moscow that would cut the price Kyiv pays for gas by about 20%. President Putin said today that Ukraine could be driving negotiations toward a dead end by asking for a deeper discount. Russian news agencies quote Mr. Putin as saying if Ukraine refuses the deal, talks will shift to a whole other level, something he said Russia does not want. Meanwhile, officials from both sides continued negotiations today in Brussels as they try to resolve the dispute on pricing and Ukraine's multi-billion dollar energy debt. The leader of Thailand's junta gave instructions today to some of the country's top diplomats to seek international understanding for the coup he carried out last month. Meanwhile, a delegation of military commanders has been dispatched to Beijing for a conference with high-level Chinese army officials. VOA correspondent Steve Harmon reports.
General Prayut Chan-o-cha, who now holds all executive and legislative power in Thailand, met at Army headquarters Wednesday with 23 of the country's ambassadors and general consuls deployed in 21 countries. The general, according to spokespersons for the junta and the foreign ministry, told the diplomats that they have a duty to create international understanding about the May 22nd coup, and he would like ambassadors and government officials to help explain, formally and informally. As the general met with the country's diplomats, a delegation of Thai military commanders were on their way to China. They are to discuss with top-level Chinese army officials regional security and future joint training exercises. Steve Herman, Bangkok.
U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says exceptional circumstances do not allow time to provide advance notice to Congress about the release of captured Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. Hagel told the House Armed Services Committee the decision to free five Taliban detainees from the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, in exchange for Bergdahl was a tough call. He said time was not on our side and a leak about the exchange would sabotage the deal. The European Union has launched an investigation into the tax deals that three countries made with international corporate giants, Apple, Starbucks, and Fiat, to see if they gave the companies an unfair financial advantage at the expense of ordinary taxpayers. The comments came from the EU's antitrust chief today. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A leading activist group is calling on the South African government to declare the country's tuberculosis epidemic a public health emergency. The Treatment Action Campaign made the plea this week at South Africa's fourth TB conference in Durban.
That's VOA's Jody Kapawa reporting. Details coming up.
Also in the news in the U.S., the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee meets today to discuss issues including conditions in northern Nigeria. And an Egyptian court sentences prominent activist Ala Abdel Fattah and 24 others to 15 years in prison.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, a U.S. panel is set to get an update on Nigeria's Boko Haram insurgency as residents in the northeastern Borno State region grapple with another reported kidnapping by the militant group. The House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee meets today to discuss issues including conditions in northern Nigeria, where the militants have been most active. Congresswoman Karen Bass tells VOA the panel will also discuss U.S. efforts to help Nigeria fight the militants. The meeting comes on the heels of another suspected kidnapping by Boko Haram in the same region where it abducted more than 200 schoolgirls in April. Witnesses say gunmen drove into the northeastern Garkin Fulani settlement and forced at least 20 women into their vehicles. They say the abductions took place on Thursday. Yesterday, National Information Center coordinator Mike O'Meary said security officials have not received any reports of a kidnapping in the region. Nigeria's military has come under growing criticism that it is not doing enough to stop attacks by Boko Haram, a group blamed for thousands of deaths during its five-year insurgency.
Truck drivers who transport humanitarian aid from Cameroon to the troubled Central African Republic have halted deliveries after suspected Seleka rebels attacked and killed three of their colleagues. The truckers say they will not go back to work unless authorities in the CAR can assure them of their safety. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Frustrated drivers are expressing anger that African peacekeepers in the Central African Republic have not protected them from the country's rebels and militia groups. One of the drivers, 52-year-old Danjuma Bello, tells VOA that he had taken the advice of the Transporters Union and will not carry goods to the CAR.
On nous a surpris comme ça là, et puis nous abandonnant les camions.
He says they were taken unaware when armed men attacked them and started shooting. He says his vehicle has holes while bullets penetrated. Bello says he narrowly missed death in last Sunday's attack, but three of his peers were killed. The drivers who transport food, relief items and other goods from Cameroon's seaport Douala say they have been victims of persistent attacks from both Seleka rebels and their anti-Balaka rivals. The president of the drivers' union, El Hajj Umaru, tells VOA that after the incident, he ordered union members to halt their deliveries.
Il s'agit encore une fois de mort d'homme. Nos chauffeurs ont été froidement égorgés. Pour le moment, nous avons...
He says their drivers were slaughtered and they suspended the transportation of goods to the CAR to bury their dead before examining what to do next. The union is insisting that African peacekeepers accompany and protect the drivers on the road into the capital, Bangui. Umaru says if that doesn't happen, the CAR may not be getting supplies by road for a long time to come. The landlocked CAR depends on the Douala seaport for about 95% of its supplies. For now, only a number of truckers who are not members of the union still brave the road to Bangui. 20 truck drivers have been killed along the road to Bangui since the unrest in the CAR began. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
A leading activist group is calling on the South African government to declare the country's tuberculosis epidemic a public health emergency. The Treatment Action Campaign made the plea this week at South Africa's fourth TB conference in Durban. VOA's Joe DeCapua reports.
The Treatment Action Campaign says TB is the leading cause of death in adults and children. Marcus Lowe is the group's head of policy.
South Africa has the highest TB infection rate on the planet. So in terms of absolute numbers, China and India have higher numbers. But when you take the size of our population into account, South Africa has the highest rates. And that is largely driven by our high HIV rates.
HIV attacks the immune system, making people more susceptible to TB infection. However, while TB is closely tied to HIV, it has not generated the same response.
HIV is a disease that had a significant footprint in the US and Europe, so there was a lot of drug development. But TB is really a disease of poor countries, so we don't have the same investment in research and development. So we're really facing a pretty serious crisis in South Africa. We have in the region of 450,000 new infections every year, and it's the number one cause of natural death in South Africa.
The Treatment Action Campaign gained prominence in South Africa in the early years of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. It helped wage a major legal battle against the government and drug companies to make antiretrovirals more available.
We want to see the same kind of widespread social mobilization that we had around HIV, around TB. Now, in some ways, it's a bit more complicated because with HIV, if you provide people with treatment and they take it, they get well. With TB, there are many more social factors that makes it much harder to deal with.
Lowe says one of those social factors is TB among South Africa's prison population.
We have a lot of overcrowded correctional facilities in South Africa, often cells with over 200% occupancy. So that creates the ideal environment for the spread of TB and, of course, drug-resistant forms of TB. So to deal with something like that, it's not just a matter for the Department of Health. It's a matter that the Department of Justice has to look at how many people we are incarcerating. The prison system has to be reformed to ensure that we have better infection control.
Some of the very first cases of drug-resistant tuberculosis were found in the eastern rural town of Tugela Ferry in KwaZulu-Natal province. The province was also the heart of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. The World Health Organization announced in late 2006 that a deadly new strain was found there and labeled it XDR-TB, or extensively drug-resistant TB.
In South Africa, the rate of normal tuberculosis, drug-susceptible tuberculosis, seems to be stabilizing, but the really worrying thing is that the rate of drug-resistant tuberculosis is going up. You know, indications are that most of these cases are not people who are developing drug resistance. Instead, they are infected with strains of TB that are already resistant. You know, that's extremely worrying. We simply don't have very good treatments for drug-resistant TB.
The treatment is long and often not successful.
At the moment, it takes about 2 years to treat someone. There are severe side effects. They have to take something like 14,000 pills in that time and 6 months of weekly injections. So it's the one area where we really don't have an answer. Part of the problem is that TB has become a disease of poor countries, poor people. And for that reason, the pharmaceutical industry doesn't really invest in TB research anymore.
Mortality rates for multi-drug resistant and extensively drug resistant TB are very high. It's estimated 50% of those diagnosed with XDR-TB in 2010 died. Activists and researchers say because TB drugs are not profitable, research funding may have to come from organizations like the Gates Foundation or TB Alliance. South Africa's National Strategic Plan for HIV, STIs, and TB does list tuberculosis as a priority, and the country's health minister is scheduled to address the TB conference on Friday. But Treatment Action Campaign's Marcus Lowe says it can be difficult getting a national strategy implemented on the local level.
South Africa has 9 provinces, and these provinces have significant autonomy in what they do. So whereas national policy may be good, these policies may not be implemented in the various provinces. That's one kind of problem we face. The other thing is that if you want to fix the problem of TB in prisons, as I explained earlier, you need other government departments to get involved, and that unfortunately hasn't been happening in recent years.
Low says diagnosing and monitoring the TB epidemic have been a problem. There is new technology for rapid diagnosing called Gene Expert, but it currently looks at resistance to only one drug. And since South Africa still heavily depends on paper record keeping instead of digital, Lowe says the epidemic may be worse than currently thought. South Africa has been getting more HIV-infected people on treatment. That also offers an opportunity to screen them for TB. In its call for a TB public health emergency, the Treatment Action Campaign says we can continue to let people die of preventable TB, or we can act with urgency and determination to defeat it. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In London, the world's first summit on ending sexual violence and conflict is underway. About 1,200 government ministers, military and judicial officials, and activists from about 150 nations are attending the conference. It runs through Friday. Among those attending is actress Angelina Jolie, who is a special envoy for the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. She said that rape has nothing to do with sex. Rather, it's done to torture and humiliate people, many of whom are very young children. Jolie joined British Foreign Secretary William Hague yesterday to open the 4-day conference. Hague called for international standards on recording and investigating sex crimes to bring perpetrators in armed conflict to justice. He said the UK is committing $10 million to a fund for victims of rape in armed conflict.
An Egyptian court has sentenced 24 pro-democracy activists to 15 years in prison, marking the first punishment for activists under the regime of new president Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Ala Abdel Fattah and the others were sentenced today for participating in an unauthorized demonstration. Abdel Fattah was charged with organizing the protest against a new constitutional measure allowing the government to try civilians in military courts. He is considered a symbol of pro-democracy activists who ignited the political revolution in Cairo's Tahrir Square in 2011. He has been a constant critic of Egypt's rulers since the beginning of pro-democracy demonstrations that resulted in the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak 3 years ago. Today's sentences are directed beyond the Brotherhood crackdown. Observers say they are also meant to alert secular pro-democracy advocates that Egypt's new government is impatient with any public political dissent in Egypt. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In the U.S., the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee meets today to discuss issues including conditions in northern Nigeria. Truck drivers who transport humanitarian aid from Cameroon to the troubled Central African Republic have halted deliveries. And an Egyptian court has sentenced 24 pro-democracy activists to 15 years in prison. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The British oil company SOCO has agreed to suspend exploration activities in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Virunga National Park next month. Virunga is Africa's oldest national park and an environmentally sensitive World Heritage Site. The agreement came after months of debate and negotiation with the World Wildlife Fund. WWF Director General Marco Lambertini said Soko's concession to withdraw from the park's Lake Albert was a victory for the planet and for good business practices. WWF filed a complaint against Soko with the European Union's Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development 8 months ago. Soko officials announced they would withdraw from the park after completing seismic tests in the lake. The agreement at least temporarily removes the threat of environmental damage to the 3,000-square-mile park. Soko chairman Rui D'Souza said their continued interest is based on Congo's need for revenues and UNESCO's goals of regional and environmental development.
A new book was launched yesterday in Rome that examines the challenges and opportunities facing millions of small-scale farmers. The Rome-based International Fund for Agricultural Development, EFAD, launched the book New Directions for Small Agriculture. It features small farming communities in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, where farmers are facing similar challenges. They include environmental risks, land tenancy disputes, and difficulties with access to credit and markets. Gary Howe is head of strategy and knowledge at EFAD. He highlighted some of the findings of the research done for the book on small-scale farmers, particularly those in Africa.
I think that the principal finding is that they're critical for food supplies for the continent. They account for perhaps 80% of all the food consumed in Africa, not only in the countryside, of course, but also in the growing cities. I think that it also underlined the fact that there's a potential for the small-scale farmers to be even a more dynamic element of the situation. Many of them are operating with very little support in terms of access to markets, in terms of technology, in terms of access to finance. And the sense is that with an appropriate policy framework and with investment, this smallholder sector can be one of the growth engines of African development.
How do you get countries then to focus on the small-scale farmers who are providing, like you said, 80% of the food for the people?
Well, I think governments confront many, many difficult policy choices. They have the requirements of expanding urban areas. They have social sector requirements to it for investment, etc. And what we're suggesting is that actually they look at the small-scale agriculture not as a social welfare area or an area of poverty which needs transfers, but an investment area. We see that a really leading element of Africa today is the growing urban areas, and we're talking with them, and I think they're well appreciating the fact that in order for cities to grow, the countryside must develop as well to feed them. African countries, in particular, 10 years ago in Maputo, really made an important decision to invest 10% of their budgets each year in the rural areas, particularly in agriculture. And many, many of them are actually doing that. So I think the issue is not so much convincing governments the smallholder sector is important, but convincing them that it's a vital contributor to their long-term development.
Outside of this, what else can be done to help small-scale farmers be able to have a sustainable living?
I think the most important thing we can do is to understand who small-scale farmers are. Small-scale farmers in Africa, Asia, are small businesses, and they have the same requirements that other small businesses have. They have a requirement for access to financial services, to roads, to get to market, clarity in land titles so that they can invest with confidence. I think there's a great deal that can be done, and that is, in fact, is being done. I think the principal story today is to look at the smallholder sector in a different way. For a long, long time, it was seen as somehow not a development force, but as something which was necessary, but it was not going to transform Africa. I think we have a very different perspective today. And I think that one of the key variables is not so much government policy, although that's critical, nor indeed international assistance, although that's important, but to develop linkages between the private sector and the small farmer. You know, the private sector is absolutely fundamental in food distribution and in food processing, which is becoming such an important part of African economies, just as they are elsewhere. And the task here is not to try and develop the smallholders separately from that sort of private investment, but to forge connections between them.
Another factor to consider when you're talking about small-scale farmers, at least I know for Africa, is that the majority of them are women. Does the fact that they're women make it more difficult to be able to get the resources they need, such as financing, credit, and getting to markets?
Women have always played a very, very important part in agriculture throughout the world. In Africa today, they probably play the predominant role. Their men are migrating, they're doing different things, and women are really the backbone of African agriculture. So the question then becomes, well, what are the specific elements of the situation of women that can facilitate becoming more productive, earn more, feed the cities better? And they're the sorts of issues that we know everywhere. It's the question of land title. Do they have land? Can they effectively make the management decisions on land? Can they use land as collateral when they go to the banks? Do they have access to the sorts of education which is required for the modern small business? These are very, very simple things, and yet in many areas a great deal rests to be done.
When you're looking at the future of the small-scale farmers, what do you see? Is there hope that they will be able to grow?
What is very, very interesting is that in many parts of the world, particularly in Africa, but not exclusively there, there's a big gap between the productivity of large farms and small farms, at least in terms of the productivity of labor. And that doesn't reflect anything specific about the smallholder condition. It reflects the fact that technology has not really been extended in a systematic way. We see really quite a dynamic role. Now, what one would see usually is that the smallholder sector would get more specialized. People would stop producing nearly everything that they require in terms of food. They will start to specialize in particular crops and then exchange with other regions for the things that they need themselves. So I think what we will see is a smallholder sector which is very, very much connected to the private sector, in both in terms of marketing and in terms of inputs, and a private sector which was much more technologically savvy than we've seen in many places for a long time.
That was Gary Howe, Head of Strategy and Knowledge at the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD. He spoke with me from Rome.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
Put your flags up in the sky.
Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit voafootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at voafootball.com.
voaafrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.
The Voice of America.
VOA.